You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Matt Migaki, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you've ever wanted to sneak backstage and share a beer with one of your favorite musicians, well, Vox and Hops is the podcast for you. This week on the podcast, I had an amazing conversation with Morgan Lander and SJ Jones about Kitty Pig. There is this episode and over 450 other ones to help you enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. So what are you waiting for? It's time to become a Vox and Hops head. Cheers!
Hey, hey, long time no see, and welcome back to another episode of Flying. Seriously feels so great to be back in the swing of things, sharing the music that I love with the community that I truly care about. I'm so excited to say that I'm booked through April. There are just so many great bands that I want to talk to that it's almost not even a blessing for me, because that means I have to say no to so many more, and I really hate doing that. I honestly feel the pull to release more than one episode a week, but I know that's just not quite sustainable for me. So for now, I'm going to have to reel myself in a little bit and make sure that I continue bringing you as many great conversations as I can. I'm super excited also to be expanding into some new genres. I just confirmed an interview with my very first hip-hop guest for the show, so that'll be coming in a couple months, and I think that's going to be a really sweet one. And also just in general, like, since this is kind of a soft reset of the podcast, I'd love to know what people want, you know, from these intros. I feel like I've kind of been a little bit all over the place, whether I talk about the artist specifically. I tried the What's the Buzz with my friend Joel Funk for a little bit. But yeah, let me know what you want to hear. Do you want to know what I've been listening to? Do you want me to shout out some new releases? The show is just as much yours as it is mine, so I would love to know, you know, what you want to see more of, what you want to see less of, you know, just what you think will best complement the conversations that I'm having. And leading into that, the conversation that I'm having today is with Jail Sox, who released, you know, one of the best emo EPs in the last few years with It's Not Forever. Last year when we had this conversation, they had just released their debut full-length Coming Down, which is, you know, honestly, it's kind of a departure from It's Not Forever. It was not, you know, the sound that I was expecting, the sound that I'd kind of fallen in love with. It was very much, you know, kind of this change to a more pop-punky side of things. Definitely, like, it's, I mean, after a few listens, I certainly, you know, fell in love with it just as much. It's, like, kind of a huge rock record in many ways. So our conversation focuses a lot on this change in sound, on all the effort that they put in through the demos, working collaboratively in the studio with Brett Romnes, you know, the kind of theme throughout the album, and this idea of epic closers. So this is a really fun one, another one recorded before the hiatus, and I'm really stoked to share it with you. So here's my conversation with Jail Sox. I feel like Coming Down is, like, maybe not quite a departure, but it's definitely a different direction than It's Not Forever. And I kind of wanted to just start by asking, like, how you would describe the album to someone who's already a fan of Jail Sox versus how you describe it to someone who's, like, a new listener.
I guess it's, like, it is a huge departure from, like, the twinkly stuff that we're used to. I guess I would just be, like, big rock and roll. Sorry.
I would describe it as just, like, a little more mature than, like, the stuff that was already out.
Yeah, like, I feel like
a little more developed.
Yeah, it's a lot. I don't know, we thought about the songs as songs rather, or I guess it was like we spent a lot of time on each song individually but still considered the album as a whole, which is something that we've never done before. So I don't know, it was just, it's a lot more, it's a mature take.
Sure. Yeah. And I'm curious, like, the teasing of LP1, I feel like was so long. It was probably, I think it was like a year after the recording was done that it was finally released. What made Peace of Mind, like, the right fit to kind of usher in the new era of Jail Sox?
I think we felt like it had enough of, like, the energy of the old stuff to kind of, like, help ease, like, someone who's already a fan of the band into the new kind of sound. Because, like, there's a little bit of, like, the twinkly riffs from the old stuff.
Yeah, and there's, like, it's kind of yelly, you know. It's
also simple.
Yeah, easy to grasp, I guess. So we just felt like it was definitely the easiest song on the record that we could choose that is a good transition between sounds.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems like working with Brett Rahmans for the production of the album seemed to kind of like really expand how you looked at your music and kind of, like you were saying, like focus more on the songs themselves and also how they fit as an album. Can you talk about like that process a little bit?
Yeah. We made demos for the entire album. I think we came in with 12 or 13 songs. And when we got there, Brett was like, okay, cool. We're going to play one song at a time. And then I'm going to completely rip it apart. I'm going to gut it and we're going to add stuff. So it was kind of like adding a new writer into our band. Like we were basically a five piece with Brett Rahmans and Rob Chiarapa, who was the other engineer on the assistant engineer on the record. And they both really acted as if they were members of the band and writers. Every day it was them coming up with ideas and us coming up with ideas together and saying no to each other and saying yes to each other. It was really cool to have another brain on something we'd been like laser focused on for almost a year at that point.
Yeah. Cause I feel like at that point we've been like doing demos for like probably like 8 or 9 months.
It was a while. Yeah.
Like every other day. And we were like super caught up, like with our own shit, you know, like, really in our own heads about it. So like when they like got their perspective on it and like told us what they thought we could change about it, it was pretty eye-opening after being like stuck on the same stuff for months and months.
And we were worried too that we weren't going to have enough material, so it was kind of like, we need to write the song, whatever, it's done, you know what I mean? So we didn't really get to focus as hard on each individual song as we should have probably. So it was nice to have Brett, you know, force us into that.
And did that kind of like working relationship, did that come really naturally in the studio, or was there a little bit of a tension at first?
Well, so we had never worked with like an actual like producer before, like someone who like tells us what they think could be better. So at first it was definitely like a little jarring because like I said, we were in our own heads about these songs. Yeah. And we were kind of like set in the way that they were.
Yeah. We're musicians, so we're hard-headed.
Yeah. There's some pride with, like, it's my song, you know, I want to do it my way. But I think we quickly got over that once we realized, oh, this guy's a genius.
Yeah.
These songs are going to be, like, 10 times better.
Yeah. And that, like, pushback was probably, it probably lasted, like, an hour.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, yeah. We were there for almost a month. We were there for, like, 3 weeks and some change. And so maybe, like, the first hour was a little awkward, but he's a super, super sweet and talented guy.
Incredible.
So it was pretty easy to let go of like the pride we had with the songs.
Nice. Yeah. And I'm curious, what were some of the songs that kind of like transformed the most, or some of the sections that you're like most happy with how they came out?
I think one of the biggest ones is Pale Blue Light was not like soft for like the most part.
Yeah. It was like
before we went in there. It would
go back and forth between being quiet and soft. And like, now the entire song is like pretty soft.
Yeah, the original demo we had just had like the opening verse, whatever, was soft, and then the rest of it was like pretty loud.
And then like there was a lot of we sped up the song as well in the demo at the end. It like ramps up and gets a lot faster. And he was like, no, we're not doing any of that. Just chillax for a second. But the biggest change, I think, was Pale Blue Light, Point Pleasant. Sorry, too many P's.
Oh yeah.
Point Pleasant was a completely different song. Like
Point Pleasant and Spinning, before we went to the studio, were like entirely different songs.
Yeah.
And we wrote like new verses, new choruses for those songs in the studio, and wrote the lyrics.
Yeah.
To those.
We had to write lyrics and melodies and stuff because the songs were so different. And I'm really stoked how they turned out. Those are two of my favorite songs in the record.
Nice. Yeah, it's funny. You're mentioning like all the songs that I have specific questions about. So I'll start with Pale Blue Light, because I feel like that one really shows like the range of the band, especially with like the falsetto vocals and how it kind of like nicely fits into the, as like the ballad on the record. Can you talk a little bit about, I guess, just like that in general and like also like the place on the album, like how you were talking about how you were kind of, you know, paying more attention to the album as a whole as well?
I think like we just really, really wanted like a soft song.
Yeah, because we our entire repertoire up until now has been just
hard hitting, like yelly stuff.
Balls to the wall emo. and we love dad rock. I'm a dad rock fiend.
Love ballads.
Yeah.
We felt like we really needed one of those. And as far as like the placement, we really wanted that to be like the side A closer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It, like give people a break before it's time to flip the record.
Because we're really into like big like theatrical endings to mm-hmm. stuff. So like I feel like it just makes sense to have that be like the big climax for side A.
And you have like four, there's a five, I don't even know how long the record is. there's like several really like in your face songs from start until Pale Blue Light, with maybe the exception of Point Pleasant. Right. But it's still pretty like loud, so pretty, like, in like your punk. Face. Yeah. So we thought it'd be nice to have in the middle of the record before someone gets up to turn the vinyl over. They can relax a little and not have their ears be just absolutely assaulted with big chords and fast drums and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, talking about that kind of like eye for, you know, an epic closer, I feel like Coming Down certainly delivers in that way. It has, you know, almost the feel of like Stray Light Run's Existentialism on Prom Night or like Constantine by Something Corporate or something. Can you talk a little about like how that one came together?
That was the last song, I think, that we like wrote before mm-hmm. we went to the studio. And yeah, like I said, I felt like we needed the big closer, you know, because the only like truly like proper like collection of songs we had out before mm-hmm. that was It's Not Forever. And we had Steering Wheel on that, which is like 6 minutes long. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
And I felt like we didn't have a song like that yet. So before we went to the studio, I just kind of threw it together out of what I like thought was like necessity, just to tie in all like the themes.
Yeah. The record has a whole overarching theme of like drugs and what it means to be like addicted to them, what it means to, you know, be addicted to them and then not have them. You know what I mean? And then there's a lot of self-realization that comes with that kind of stuff. So we definitely wanted to tie that theme in because Caving In is the same way. Like same theme, same lyric. Caving In is more like giving into it, right? Like, okay, cool. This is just how I'm going to be. And then Coming Down is more like, fuck. Yeah, like wow, I don't know if this is the right way to do things. So thematically, we wanted it to be on the end of the record. And we, like Aiden just said, we dad rock. So the giant ballad closer is always fun.
Nice. Yeah. And I mean, can you talk a little bit more about that kind of like the thematic overarching of the album? Because I feel like it's very much presented as kind of like, this is what's happening as it's happening. And I'd love to hear about the kind of like journey of the album and kind of also what you hope listeners will get from it.
Well, I think I've just been like super obsessed with the concept of like the passing of time, right? Because you can't escape it and it's terrifying. So I feel like all the songs that I write are like typically about that in some way, like positive experiences, negative experiences.
Yeah. And like to be more literal, like with the drug theme, each song, you know, we have songs about friendships and both positive and negative, right? With like Point Pleasant being a positive song.
Yeah.
There's a lot of inward reflection with songs like No Ground and stuff. Which is something that comes with drug addiction and like the passing of time, right? It's like,
yeah,
you can feel it like going throughout the album, lyrically at least. Like these are all of the ups and downs of this experience that, you know, our narrator, us, have been dealing with for, you know, many years.
Mostly just like getting older and like learning what's what.
Yeah. Learning how to act as a human being and just naturally. And struggling with that.
Yeah, I feel like one of the most specific instances of that is On the Run. It feels like this real kind of like coming to terms with growing up song.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I, you know, should I be in an office right now? Like I would hate that.
We like think about this kind of stuff all the time. Like when you're like trying to do music, you're trying to do the thing and like push yourself as hard as you can. Especially like last year when we were writing, and like everything was shut down, we were like damn, like, is this really it? Like, can we do this forever?
Yeah. So, and that extends to any kind of like not quote unquote normal career choice, right? Like someone tells their parents, hey, I'm going to go to art school, and their parents get really mad at them about it. You feel like a pressure to not do the things you want to do because people around you, you know, they're just not about it. You know what I mean? They're moving away. Everyone's moving away. Right. And you're kind of stuck doing like what you want to do. And sometimes it feels like you just can't, and maybe it's not the best idea. But, you know, we do it anyways.
So. Yeah, I mean, and now that, you know, you're kind of at that next step in the process where it's like the album is out and you have tours on the horizon, how are you kind of like feeling about, you know, your place in the world or in the music industry or however, you know, whatever you're, you know, kind of wherever you're putting yourselves?
Excited?
I'm feeling a little optimistic.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, normally I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Reception seems to be like pretty good. People like it. I'm excited.
I miss playing music live, and I don't know. I like being on tour with my best friends and experiencing emotions with a group of people every night. It's very it's very cathartic.
So yeah, we're feeling pretty good about it right now.
And It's Not Forever like feels so much like this fall kind of like dark night, first dark night where you're kind of like you need a hoodie and you're like crunching, you can feel the crunching of leaves under your feet, both coming down feeling so different. I'm curious like what you feel like the right setting for the album is.
I think we wanted a summer record.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Windows rolled down, riding down the highway, still being sad, of course. but like we like wind in your hair type, you know, sun on your skin was the kind of the goal. There are songs that do not feel like that at all, but I think the majority of the record is, to me, very upbeat and bright. That's what I kind of imagine. You're hanging out with your friends in a car, you know.
For sure. If you're too sad, the sweat can hide your tears.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like Point Pleasant is kind of like almost the embodiment of that kind of feeling in a way. It's like this sickly sweet love song, you know, even more so than something I expected to hear from Jail Sox. How did that one kind of come together?
Well, for the same reason that we felt like we should have a slow song, it's because like, I think we never like explored that range of emotion. You know, we felt like we needed a happy song, and it like felt good to get it out, mm-hmm. You know?
Cause everyone's, you know, human, as much as pessimistic as we can all be in our good Lord's year of 2021. we still have good times, and we still love things. People. Yeah, yeah. You know, we love each other and
we just wanted to explore like that side of things.
Yeah.
And, as opposed to just making the whole record sad.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause our entire repertoire is extremely sad. So being able to be like, okay, cool. Just so you know, we're human beings. here's a happy song.
We have a range of emotions. We swear.
Yeah. we're not wearing all black and smoking cigarettes in the corner by ourselves all the time.
Nice. Yeah. And I feel like Spinning has like really the most kind of like pop sensibility on the record. I can't really put my finger on why, but for some reason it reminds me of like an All American Reject song or something like that. Like not in a bad way though. Can you talk a little about kind of like that side of the music?
Wow, we just wanted something fun. It was so fun. We were scared to put that song on the record.
Yeah, we described it in the studio as like a funky song.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like Jonas Brothers-y.
Yeah.
But a lot of credit for that song goes to Rob Chirapa,
yeah,
the assistant engineer, because we were really struggling with that one in the studio, and we ended up rewriting all like the verses and like switching up the chorus, and we kind of like didn't know where to go with it, and we had like one late night where it was just us and Rob in the studio, and we like set up where we all had our instruments, and we just like worked through with him, and he is a big pop guy, like big like 1975 like style of production. With him, and he just like he saw like the vision that we wanted to have like a super upbeat like Disney Channel song, and he like walked us through
realizing that. Yeah, yeah. It was very scary to say the least, but you know, so far it seems like everyone's favorite, so I'm stoked on that.
The scariest part of the song was the wah pedal.
Yeah.
I feel like as much as you know the album feels like, you know, it feels very much in the realm of like the modern pop punk sound. And I also feel like, you know, you mentioned dad rock, and I also feel like it would kind of like fit right at home in the early like 2000s pop punk, like indie rock side of the scene. I'm curious, just like, how did your influences kind of change during the writing of this versus, you know, the previous material?
Well, I tell everyone before we started writing this record, me and Coleman and Jake too, we all got really into Third Eye Blind.
Definitely not me as much as Coleman and Nate.
Oh yeah,
I do love Third Eye
Blind. I like got obsessed with Third Eye Blind, and I got obsessed with like that whole vibe of like mid to late 90s, early 2000s, like radio rock, like Third Eye Blind, Matchbox 20.
Jimmy Eat World
kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe even like a sprinkle of The Fray, just
because. Oh, yeah, maybe. Oh, yeah.
I feel like a lot of those bands get like written off as corny, which they are, like undeniably corny.
But I like, but, corny. Like
it's great music if you like get past that like hurdle.
It's like how our production and songwriting has matured. What we listen to on a regular basis has changed a lot, you know, going from like bedroom recording DIY bands, which we still listen to, but like just falling in love with corny lyrics and tight guitar tones and massive drums, just having fun, you know what I mean?
I got into Nickelback recently.
Oh yeah, Nickelback's been a mainstay since I was about 6 months old.
Yeah. I feel like we wanted to like get the sound across that like we're like kind of like shameless about our corny influences.
Yeah, and we grew up as like metal kids and pop punk kids anyways. So like
it's always gonna bleed through.
Yeah, we like clanky guitar tones and like overproduced drums. It's just fun. That's what we like.
Yeah, I was born in 93, so I grew up like as a 90s kid, but I wasn't into like the rock scene until like middle school because I grew up on country. So I feel like all of that like late 90s, early 2000s stuff is like just not in my kind of like I don't know that much about it. So like when bands start like feeling like, I feel like a lot of bands lately have mentioned like, you know, like you said, Third Eye Blind and stuff as like influences. I'm just like, I don't see it, but I enjoy this music. So maybe I should go check that out at some point.
Yeah, they're goofy. It's corny.
I recommend it though.
Yeah.
Nice. And then on the kind of like back end, one of the big changes between It's Not Forever and Coming Down is the switch from No Sleep to Counterintuitive. I'm curious how that kind of relationship started and how you're feeling about it.
Well, we felt like at a certain point in the relationship, we didn't really like see eye to eye with Chris from No Sleep and like how he ran things. There's definitely no bad blood or anything. And we just felt like we wanted to put the record out somewhere else. And Jake Solzer came through and helped us get out of that contract.
Yeah.
And
we just wanted to work harder than we were able to, is all. And I think Chris saw that. So he let us go. And we went to Counterintuitive, and we've been working hard as hell because Gilzer wants to work hard with us, and it's been really, really great. Super great.
Nice. And what are some of those like higher benchmarks that you've wanted to hit and some of them that you have hit?
Well, we wanted to, first of all, we wanted to write a massive rock record. and that was, I felt like it was a little easier to, for other people to kind of leave that on their palette. I don't think Chris was that excited for us to do that. He loves the album and he loves us. I don't know, just the way and the way we were rolling out the plan to roll out the album on No Sleep was a lot different than the plan that Counterintuitive had. I think we just kind of saw whatever Counterintuitive wanted to do as a lot more on our level, I guess, and what we want to do, like singles and, you know, music video and stuff like that were never even kind of mentioned before, but now they are. So we're really stoked on that. And certain kind of tours and stuff have come with the Counterintuitive record and or Counterintuitive record contract. Yeah, I don't know.
I think we feel like we fit more in this corner of the lane.
Yeah, for sure.
Nice. Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned like the overarching you know, feel of the album. What was the process like for, you know, choosing which singles to release?
Yeah. So like we said, with Peace of Mind, it was honestly purely just to, it was a musical transition. Like it was purely to let people know, hey, yeah, it's a little different.
It was a pretty obvious choice for us for like the first single.
Yeah.
I think we all just knew, like, we didn't really need to have a conversation about the first single. Mm. But there was a lot of debate about the second single.
Yeah.
We asked a lot of people because we were in between Spinning and Sick Weather.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Both like pretty big like departures from the old sounds.
I guess
pretty scary.
Yeah. And the reason that was, those were the two, is because I sing a lot on this record, and that is not something that has happened before with Jail Socks. So we wanted to put out a song that I sing so that you know, people can get used to that,
yeah.
That idea of you're not only going to hear Aiden the entire time, as much as we all want to. but so there was a lot of debate about it, but Sick Weather felt like the most, you still have like an emo sensibility, I guess, with the open picking of the chords and right. Stuff.
You also got a butt rock guitar solo.
Yeah. So we were like, cool, we have a little bit of emo, but can we please give you some dad rock right now, please? So it was more of like trying to help people come to terms with what Jail Socks is going to sound like.
And you mentioned, you know, kind of how Spinning was one of the ones you were most afraid to release, and also ends up being, it seems to be one of the ones that people are most excited about. Are there any other kind of like surprises with, you know, once the album was fully out to the world?
I think I'm surprised that people like Code Blue Light as much as they do.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a big one.
Yeah. It's such a ballad, you know what I mean? It's such a rock ballad, and that was pretty scary.
I also felt like people weren't going to like Point Pleasant, oddly enough. But people seem to be digging it.
Yeah, it's my favorite song on the record. I can see why Aiden was so scared of it. I wasn't scared at all. That song's awesome.
But I do think Spinning was like kind of like a big shock.
I expected
a bit of like pushback from like, I guess like
emo elitists,
you know.
Yeah. Being like, oh my god, they sold out. No, I just really like the Jonas Brothers a lot.
I feel like, you know, things are really, the last few years there's been just like this explosion of kind of like different sounds within the scene, and it's been really cool to see people start to accept that like more and more.
Yeah, I think we have Gami to thank for that. Origami Angel.
Nice. Yeah, I love them. And then I always like to wrap up the same way, which is just by asking for a piece of advice or something you've been thinking about that you want to share, whether it's music or life or anything else.
Tell your friends you love them. You know, that's number one for me. I tell Aiden I love them all the time. And listen to Jimmy Eat World and Third Eye Blind or die sad about them. And I don't know what kind of advice Aiden has.
Advice.
Drink water.
I think you really nailed it.
Yeah.
With that one.
Do drink water. You will. Maybe it won't make you happier, but you won't be in pain all the time.
And also, see us on tour.
See us on tour. We're going on tour. Home safe and arm's length, baby.
You'll be aged by 10 years.
Yes. Yeah. We're gonna.
It'll clear your skin.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been hearing talk that we are the world's best COVID vaccine. So.
Nice. And I mean, is there anything else that we haven't hit on about the record that you've been really itching to get out?
Thanks for listening, dude. Like, it's so good. And I'm so stoked on it. I love it. You know what I mean? I'm glad people love it. We were pretty iffy on whether or not people would like it, but we made something we really enjoyed. So I'm glad everyone enjoys it with us.
Yeah, coming out of It's Not Forever, it certainly wasn't what I was expecting, but like once I was able to get like those two or three like full album listens in, I was like, yeah, this is still the good shit.
Yeah, it's definitely an acquired taste for sure. When coming from It's Not Forever.
And there we go, another episode in the bag. I feel like there's a lot of buzz for Coming Down, but maybe because of the hiatus and kind of stepping back from things for a little bit, I feel like I didn't see a ton of talk about it once it was released, so I hope this conversation sheds some light on it and continues to bring, you know, attention to it, because it really is a great album within its own right. We'll be back next week with another sweet episode. This will be the last one recorded before the hiatus, and I'm super stoked to bring that to you and bring you brand new content, because there's so much music that I'm super excited about this year and that I kind of missed while I was away that, you know, I'm still catching up on a little bit. just to share a couple more things that I've been really excited about lately. Non-music related, actually. Today, the day before the podcast goes up, I picked up the brand new issue of Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. It's my favorite comic book ever, I would say. It's pretty safe to say. It's been on hiatus for 2.5 years now, and I'm just so excited to read this new issue. It's a comic that deals with themes of war, love, racism, sexism, violence, transgender issues, and so much more. And it's truly one that I would recommend to anyone, even if you've never read a comic book in your life. I've also been rewatching Breaking Bad, and that show is just basically perfection. And then I guess music related a little bit. I've been finding a lot of really cool music on TikTok lately. Some of my favorites would be Mel Bryant and the Mercy Makers, which is very much in line with this podcast, kind of like a little bit, you know, it's like indie rock, a little bit of edge, and I just really highly recommend them. Jay Pitts shares his stories of when he used to work in the psych ward, as well as some really awesome hip-hop songs. And then the one that I really love the energy of is Akintoye, his song Respectfully. I didn't think there was a song that could get me as pumped as Set Your Goals as Mutiny, but that is 100% one that does, and you should check that out right now because that song goes so hard. And yeah, I mean, that's about all I have, so feel free to hit me up on Twitter. Like I said, if you have any suggestions for what I should be doing with this intro and outro, I really want to, you know, make this something that's interesting for you in addition to the conversations I'm having specifically. So have a great week until next Thursday, and I'll catch you back with another new episode then. Flying the Call is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. Special thank you, as always, to The Alternative for helping promote the show, Jariah for the theme song, and Michaela Jane for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at Flying the Call Pod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at flyingthecallpod@gmail.com. You are loved.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11. Oh.